Welcome to Under the Influence, the podcast where we help chiropractors improve their communication skills so they can help more people and help people more. I'm your host, Dr. Martin Harvey. I'm a chiropractor and I'm an expert in communicating the value of chiropractic. Today on Under the Influence, I am joined by Ash Pritchard. Ash is a chiropractor, has an amazing practice in New Zealand with his wife, Katie, and he's also served for many years on the board of the New Zealand College of Chiropractic, including an extended period, as the chair of that board. So he plays the game at a whole lot of different levels, including being involved in what I think of as one of the best chiropractic colleges in the world. So I recently heard Ash speak at the Australian Chiropractic College Concordia event, and he was applying Simon Sinek's ideas about the infinite game. And so what are we talking about here? Well, he'll expand on it through the call, but the short idea is we often talk about playing the long game as opposed to playing the short game, that when we play the long game, we're looking at long-term value for the people involved in whatever game that is. So if we're talking in chiropractic, then we're talking about building long-term relationships and being okay, perhaps, with not maximizing what we get out of something in the short term in the service of being able to create something more remarkable over the long term, and being less involved in just short distractions and shiny bright objects and those sort of things that are very much the epitome of the short game. So what's the infinite game? Well, the infinite game is where the fundamental purpose of the game is to keep the game going. And so if we look through this lens at our communication, at how we run our chiropractic practice, and even how we look at our contribution to chiropractic, our chiropractic career, very much changes how we go about things. And I loved Ash's talk, and I equally loved our chat that I'm sharing with you today. Ash is a really thoughtful person, he's a great chiropractor, and I really feel this is one of those deep chats that will help really shift your perspective around what's possible for you in chiropractic. A couple of announcements. May 18th, which is a Saturday, I will be teaching a one-day seminar in London, the Daily Visit Communication Intensive. You will come out of it having learnt and also developed the way that you want to apply an approach to connect and communicate with people every single visit, where you're connecting with them as an individual and you're communicating the value of chiropractic to them as an individual. And another kind of layer of individualization, it'll be your unique approach. And the goal of the workshop is by the end of the day, you will have that mapped out so that you can go back into practice the next day and start implementing it rather than going out with a huge to-do list of things that you've got to do over the next 6 weeks. So I hope to see many of you who are Northern Hemisphere type folks there. Great time to be in London. The weekend after that, so the Friday and Saturday, May 24th and 25th, I will be speaking at the Portuguese Chiropractic Association 25th anniversary event. Amazing lineup. I'm really looking forward to hearing a whole lot of the other speakers speak, and I'm also looking forward to sharing some communication strategies and approaches with people who are there. Looks like an amazing event. And a great opportunity to get a holiday in Europe as well. So link for both of these is in the show notes, and check it out. So quick segue then, please welcome to the podcast, Dr. Ash Pritchard.
Hey Ash, great to see you.
It's great to see you as well, Martin. It's pretty exciting to be on this. I've listened to this podcast for a long time now. You could sort of say it's a long time listener, first time caller. Honored to be here, mate.
Well, I'm honored to have you as well, because I think I reached out to invite you onto the podcast in the early days of the podcast, and you were one of the people who said, not at the moment, other things going on, and don't feel like I've got anything specific to say at the moment, which I think speaks very strongly around the value of then listening to you. I think there's a lot of us who kind of get off on just the attention of getting up in front of people or getting onto podcasts. And I think that you have now buckled under my repeated admonitions to come on says it's going to be a good one. So,
That's exactly right. I did buckle a little bit. No, I used to follow the old Jerry Klum advice. Yeah, the person who listens the most tends to have the most understanding and probably the most control over a conversation. So maybe I did too much listening and not as much talking. But it's good to be here, mate. And it's quite a nice thing you're doing because it's there's nothing more important in our profession than being able to communicate, right? And if chiropractors can do that well, then we get to serve people well and empower people well. So. Yeah, it's nice to be on here and be a part of it.
Absolutely. And so we'll get around to your sort of journey and kind of the, I guess, to jump ahead, particularly what I was interested in inviting you on was I loved your presentation at Concordia, the Australian Chiropractic College's Concordia that was maybe a month ago in Adelaide now. And we'll loop back to that in a minute if that's okay. But super important question, what sort of coffee are you under the influence of these days?
I had that conversation this morning because I do vary a little bit, but it's always going to be a black coffee. And over the summer months, I tend to switch it to I order a short black and then I ask for a glass of ice on the side and I pour the short black into the glass of ice, let it cool down a little bit, then and sip away off the bitter taste of the cold, icy feeling to it. So that's my go-to at the moment. And then in winter, I'll switch that across to probably a long black or an espresso or something. More wintry, but it's yeah, I'm more about sharing the coffee experience than I am too much about the drinking coffee.
It's interesting you say that. I typically in the morning, first coffee is a short black with ice with a little bit of water. It does just it's yeah, I do it year round, but it is particularly summer. It's a nice experience.
It is. It's a great way to drink coffee, I think.
Definitely, absolutely. And yes, I agree. Coffee is the ultimate stimulant for conversation as well. So,
Yeah, I avoided the coffee drinking for many years because it used to throw me sideways. But now I've married into coffee, you could say, and it's a nice connector for both of us.
Katie's a keen coffee person, is
She
she?
loves her coffee. She just left a few minutes ago saying, "Should I have my third?" And then I let her make that decision. But yeah, she loves her coffee.
So yeah, it's interesting. I think there's I was reading, I didn't sort of go deep down the rabbit hole, but there is a different, there's quite a big different genetic difference in the way people process caffeine. And so by the sound of it, it sounds like the opposite attracts where you might be a she might be a great processor and you might not have quite the genetic predisposition to chew through the caffeine.
I think you're right. It's in that book, Eat Right for Your Type. I think they
Is
talk about
it?
it in there as well. And yeah, Katie did make sure she dog-eared the pages that reinforce that coffee is good for her type.
Yeah, excellent. All right, I think I must share that type.
Yeah.
So there's you've done a bunch of things across your career. So you were the is it the chair or the is it the chair of the board of the New Zealand College of Chiropractic for a number of years and on that board for many more years in private practice with Katie in Auckland, New Zealand. What else should I be adding in there in the CV of Ash?
That's probably enough of the big highlights. But yeah, I was fortunate enough to be appointed on the trustee board. I was 2 years out of practice actually, and got a bit of a shoulder tap, and I jumped at the chance. Who wouldn't want to be sitting around a room of the mentors and idols in the profession? So I was on the board for 17 years, believe it or not.
Wow.
And yeah, a good chunk of that I was chair of the board as well. So yeah, very fortunate to be given that opportunity, and it's probably one of the best ways to grow, right? You get thrown into different sand pits that you normally idolize, and you have to learn quick and listen hard. Yeah, I'm very honored to be able to have those opportunities.
Fantastic. And so if we look at it sort of big picture wise, and if you choose to go into the discussion that you had around different types of games at Concordia, that this would be a great spot for it. But what's the influence that you are looking to have these days?
It's a funny one that because I think I've always believed that chiropractic kind of reveals itself in stages, and I think it depends on how that starts, right? And For me, a chiropractor revealed itself in a triathlon magazine, and it was talking about performance. And I was a runner at the time, and it just talked about what the human body is capable of.
Yep.
And it talked about the nervous system, and if you're free interference of that, then who knows what your body can achieve. And that was my first awareness of chiropractic. So it revealed itself in a very vitalistic
Yeah.
way.
Yep.
And I think that's how chiropractic works, is your first exposure is kind of your revelation to chiropractic, and if that's done in a certain way, you'll go on a journey, and if it's done in a different way, you'll end up in a different journey, and it could be a long journey or a short journey. So for me, I was quite fortunate. That was the start of it. So I think as chiropractic unfolds, you look at it from your own perspective first, right? How is this going to serve me? And then if it is more about human expression and removing interference by subluxation and so forth, then the natural progression is, do I want to use this as a tool to help others? So you're sort of expanding from self to others. So become a chiropractor, obviously. And then if that's your same journey, like what's the next layer? So it goes from self to profession to, who knows where it goes. So I guess that's been my journey. I've just been open to what that next expression will be. And when you tend to be open to that, positions tend to come your way. Like being invited on podcasts, that's not something you go and seek out, right? But it's things come your way when you have a certain perspective and a certain vision of how chiropractic can play, and layers of that. So yeah, it's
Okay, so if I can sort of touch on a couple of points there, then it sounds to you, to me, that your kind of entry into the profession was through that performance-based lens, and then you've kind of followed that journey both as a chiropractor in your private practice, focusing on, I guess, sort of leading people towards that perspective and that type of care, and then also through involvement with the New Zealand College, which I think is an exemplar of a college that prepares chiropractors for that type of practice. Is that the way that you would see it? That's the sort of North Star of it all, is that's central.
I think North Star is a very good visual of it, and things that either align with that North Star or they don't, right? So if you're looking at supporting things, you look like, okay, what aligns? So obviously NZCC was one of those. That's really clear to me. And Adelaide, Scotland, they're all aligned. If you're looking at colleges, which ones do you want to support and which ones would you like to refer, students to? They're the ones you choose because they're the ones who support your vision and they're fully congruent. And then you look at other things like, research-wise, AFRF is kicking goals in the same territory, so that's where you put energy and support them. It does make life really easy, because you've got this North Star that determines yes, no, and how much you want to support and head that direction. And it's very easy to say no to things that don't. So I quite like the simplicity of that.
Fantastic. So what if I can do a little segue here? One of the sort of visual, like not visuals, one of the frameworks that you put around how we can go about our life and about practice that you presented at Concordia was, I guess, referencing Simon Sinek's ideas around finite and infinite games. And I found that a really powerful way of looking at not just how we view it, but also in this sort of abstract way. But it was a very concrete thing of, and this will inform everything that you do in your practice. Once you have that framework, it completely changes things. So could you maybe share like a little précis or your thoughts around how those ideas relate to us as chiropractors?
And Simon Sinek, if I mean, I'm assuming most people listen to this have heard of him, and they've probably read some of his stuff, if not watched some of the videos. He's a master at simplifying things, right? And I remember watching the video years ago, and he talked about finite games and infinite games, and he's applying it to organizations and businesses and so forth. And he talked about the finite game being the short game that has a real clear start, real clear ending. The players are well known. It has really distinct rules. It has clear metrics, like a clear scoreboard, so you know who's going to win, who's not going to win. And basically, when the game is over, it's over. Like it's pretty much finished. And if you relate that to in chiropractic, obviously, if you're symptom based or you're there to treat symptoms, that's a very clear short game. Someone arrives, the beginning of the game. The symptom's gone, that's the end of the game, and that game is over. It doesn't continue beyond that point. And that's fairly relevant in certain ways of practicing chiropractic for some people. And then the long game was all about there is no clear boundaries to it. He calls it the infinite game, being there's no end to that game, and the ultimate objective is to keep the game going forever, and to stay in the game forever. That really resonated with me with the objective of chiropractic, both as a the way you can serve people, but also the future state of the profession. If we're going to serve people from a vitalistic perspective, then we need to frame everything in our practice around the long game, not be really definitive and narrow-minded on what the outcomes or the objectives are. Allow people to express the way that they can express themselves. Not really define that, and that's chiropractic, right? Removing interference so the nurse system can communicate beautifully and allow people to express themselves the best they possibly can. And if we can do that for their entire life, and then think beyond their life and think generationally, it's never ending, right? So I really resonated with that. I like the simplicity of it, and I think if we're looking at serving people the best that chiropractic is capable of, then playing the long game makes complete sense to me. And if we can play that way, but probably as importantly, particularly for a podcast like this, is if we can communicate that way, very, very good at empowering people with those perspectives, then they get to play the long game quite nicely. And if we, I guess, circling back to my journey, I was fortunate enough to have that start. Someone communicated to me with a long game, and it was an instantly long game for me. It wasn't sort of, I didn't read an article about, even running faster, like that has a finite end. It was more of performance. And that set my journey straight into the long game, and it's always going to be that way. So the start that we set our people off and the way we communicate that, if we communicate the short game, it's over pretty quick. If we communicate the long game, then we're setting people up for the future, and who knows what they'll be able to achieve. And both personally and professionally, it's quite an exciting way to focus, I think.
Absolutely. I think the things that I got from your presentation, or at least my interpretation of it, was that it is really important that we have that framework, because if we have that, this person who's coming into my practice, while they may have concerns around headaches or back pain or neck pain or whatever else, if we view that through a short game lens, then it changes our communication, it changes what we measure, it changes how we present a care plan or any of those sort of things. Whereas we can look at that and say, well, that game has at its core the idea of there being winners and losers. And yes, I want to set it up so that they win and I win. But whereas if we frame it with an infinite game where we're saying, no, the goal of this really is to create a relationship that, and that an infinite game is defined by wanting to have keep the game going, then we're coming into it with a, well, first of all, I need to know who this person is and what's important to them, to see them as more than a headache, a back pain, whatever else. And then at what we focus on from a communication perspective, from a measurement perspective, from a care plan presentation, all of those things are completely different. It's not just this abstract idea that makes us feel good when we're writing a mission statement for our practice. It's an actual filter for everything that you do.
Yeah, 100%. And it really starts from the first minute of your interaction with somebody. It's and it makes sense no matter what someone arrives with. Like you mentioned, it could be headaches, but the symptomatology doesn't change the story. It's just their entry point and their understanding when they first arrive. But it's quite a clear thing to understand. If you just simplify it and meet them on their life and their passions and what their interests are, it's quite an easy segue. Who doesn't want to lead a better life? Who doesn't want to, see what their body's capable of? And it's just taking your time to do that. And when you're playing the long game, you don't have to educate in visit one. You're revealing chiropractic to them over a period of time, allowing them to sort of take that on board and apply it to their life. So less telling and more just conversations and questions, and and letting it unfold itself is, and it's a nice way to practice. You know, it's a lot less pressure on you when you're letting things unfold and you know, allowing, you know, innate to express itself and them to experience that and them to go on that journey. It's a very nice way to practice, and it tends to, I find it gets phenomenal results because you're open to seeing those results, and they are as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing that I guess my interpretation of that long game as well is, and it aligns with what you're talking about decreasing that pressure, is that if we're looking at, look, the purpose of this is to keep the game going, then to me, it prioritizes the relationship with the person rather than some of these ideas in chiropractic that we have about conversion and closing and those sort of things that to me feel like they're part of a short game perspective. And so when we are having people come in to see us, we can present what our ideas are, understanding from my perspective in a long game view, if they've been playing a health-related short game for a long period of time, the rules of a long game may not immediately make sense to them. It might take them experiencing things for a period of time to get with that. And part of that journey can be that people will come in for a period of time and stop care because that's the rules of the game that they're used to playing. But if I'm playing by long game rules, I'll keep the loop of that relationship going so that they feel welcome to come back and not judged for what they've done. So that in the long term, that to me, their experience of their body with care, that if you use your communication to allow them to see the impact of chiropractic care more broadly than just their symptoms. But then they experience, well, I don't have the same level of energy. I don't have the same capacity for things when I don't have care. Then it helps them, I guess, sort of across towards the rules of the long game.
I love your mention of never closing the loop. I think that's really, really important. It made me think of Mark Possles, which I think a lot of your listeners and definitely yourself know really, really well. And he was the master of leaving open-ended questions when he'd walk out of the room.
Yes, absolutely.
It just and it sometimes it'd be the most random statement or a random question, but it was that concept, right? Is keep the loop open and keep the thought process going and keep the growth going. As opposed to walking out and telling someone to do something and leaving, you've closed the loop completely. And
I've had
sorry,
the
go.
pri- No, that's okay. I've had the privilege of watching Mark in practice a number of times, and he's just got this amazing talent for leaving that. He doesn't feel like things have to be shut down on at that moment at the end of a visit. So I remember a couple of phrases that he'd use again and again and again, where people would pose an experience that they might have had to him. And early on in practice, I would feel I need to have an answer for that. And
Exactly.
whereas his perspective really opened me up to actually, it's more powerful if you don't have an answer because it requires them to process it. And a couple of phrases that I love that he used that I then use a lot is, well, you know, why do you think that is? So somebody might say, you know, I felt after the last adjustment, I just felt really wiped out. And they go, oh, interesting. Why do you think that might be? And just be completely happy that they might be floundering for an answer. And he played enough of a long game that he didn't really mind whether he just gave them 30 seconds and then gave them an answer, or more likely, he would loop back to it on a subsequent interaction to give them a really decent amount of processing time. And the other one that I really loved that he would do that was almost a pattern interrupt would be somebody might say something like, you know, along those lines of I felt wiped out or I noticed this or what, and he would just say, oh yeah, that can happen and just kind of move on. And I was like, yeah, I love it. It's such leadership in his attitude to it rather than what he said. And just, yeah, absolute master.
And exactly. And the other one that I loved is he always started a sentence with "I wonder," and it just creates curiosity, right? It doesn't close anything down. It goes, "I wonder what that was. I wonder what your body might do, you know, X, Y, and Z," and just literally walk out of the room. And I quite like the surprise tactic of that, but also the curiosity that it creates in people. And they will let that percolate between visits, and they might come back with a "What did you mean?" or "What was that?" But it just it keeps the flow going or the wheel spinning, and that's really, really important. And it's really important when you, I mean, I remember when I first graduated, You're very good at answering questions because you spent the last 4 to 5 years answering questions. I mean, that's what education does. Is you know the better way you can answer a question and write it down, or viva voce is you got trained to play the short game. Like the university and study is all about the short game, because you the short game could be study for an exam, do the exam, done, next exam. And when you graduate, you're prone to give a lot of information because you're trained to answer a lot of questions and close loops continuously. And it takes a while to kind of get yourself out of that habit to being okay with space, to being okay with saying I'm not too sure, or being okay with leaving something open-ended. That's really where the mastery comes into it, is making that transition across. So it's not an easy transition, but I think it's one that you've got to keep working at. I think as you go on in time, like you and I have been in the profession for a while, it's probably easier because you slow down, you got less to prove, and you don't have to answer everything. You can just keep it open-ended. But when you're starting, it's a little bit more challenging.
I sort of feel like there's two things that come together to create that capacity for that. And I'd be curious if you sort of feel similarly. One is there's that communication skill, that sort of okay, that there can be gray. Things don't have to be black and white. Things don't have to be resolved in the moment. It's okay, and in fact, beneficial to have the other person thinking about things rather than you having the answer. And that actually, there's a paradox there where your lack of need to prove your perspective actually makes your perspective more attractive. So there's that communication part of it. And I also feel there's like a certainty perspective around chiropractic, where as you are more certain in chiropractic, you feel, like you say, less need to prove to somebody in a short term, that what exactly the veracity of what your perspective might be.
I love the word certainty. I think that certainty doesn't even have to come through words, doesn't it? Everything you do can play certainty. I mean, my wife Kate and I were having a conversation this morning, a bit of a laugh about it. Like in practice for a very long time, I'd say very few words. And but you ask any of my practice members what my beliefs are and my values are and what I think about certain topics, they're really, really clear on answering them. And people say, how do they know that? Because I actually never even talked about it. But so certainty can come through in multiple ways. Whereas Katie's style is she's a great communicator, a great talker. So which is beneficial to me because the walls are thin, so she can educate my people as well. Through words. So maybe that's where they got all the ideas from. But yeah, I think certainty it comes with time, doesn't it? I think you can graduate with certainty around the principles from an educated perspective, but to own them and to live them and see them unfold over the years in practice, that's a whole different level of certainty around what is possible in chiropractic, and then to be able to communicate that in multiple forms, that's where the beauty comes. And you can't get that in day one, right? And that's why we talked about the long game. That is the long game for yourself, is keep growing in that area and letting that unfold and let it reveal itself, and keep expanding the layers. I've always been a big fan of perceiving layers in your life. You start with self, which is probably appropriate when you're a student. Then you might expand that to family because that's your next immediate layer, and then probably extended family. Then it goes to community or practice, and profession, and then you go society, and then you can go world, and then you go universe. You keep working your way out those layers so that you keep growing relative to those layers. But if you stay on self and stay one on one or something like that, then that's the level you're going to probably grow at, which for me is slightly limited in expression. But it depends on where you want to go with it.
And I can see that. And it seems a framework that aligns with that infinite gain, that it's both infinite in length and infinite in potential influence. So there's a nice segue there.
It is nice when you come across a model that just seems to fit, right? And especially one that keeps everything really, really simple.
As a frame of reference, I think when things get busy and there's a fair bit going on, having that ability to zoom out a layer and say, oh, no, hang on, this is what's important, is really grounding.
And one of the things that Cynic referred to is that the short games are very seductive. And I think I did mention this at Concordia, is It's very human nature to be seduced by short games because they're exciting. There is a clear start and finish, and who doesn't like getting to the end of the day and then ticking off multiple items on their to-do list? That's quite exciting. Even to the point where sometimes you add a few more items to your to-do list that you've already done because you want to add them and tick them off at the same time. You know, I don't know whether you've done that, but I'm sure I've done
Ah,
that in
I've
times.
just I have to discipline myself to when if I've already done something before I go to my to-do list, I have to discipline myself not to put it on so I can
No,
take it
well,
off.
that's yeah, and that's the seductive part about it because it's you know short games they're very exciting because we love achieving things, we love ticking things off, but as you said, every now and then you got to pause and got to take a step back and see, you know, what's the long game here, and yeah, I bet your to-do list will be very different if you start with the long game and then write down all the things you want to do to help contribute to that, as opposed to just writing down a whole pile of short games and then sort of filtering the relative to what you can tick off. It's a very different outcome.
I also feel like there's a greater challenge between the infinite game versus the finite or short game now with the impact of social media. Because at its core, I would say that social media is people are putting up their most impressive version of their outside, and our human nature is then to compare our inside to this seductive picture. And so it can often distort the sort of things that you're aspiring towards because it's, well, wow, that guy's got a new car and he's on holiday in this exotic location and he's doubled his practice in 90 days using this special script and all these things that I look at as, well, they're not really long game things. They're very short game winners, losers, impressing people with these outward displays. And I worry that they do push people towards very transactional short game thinking in the way that they approach practice.
And I think that's why they're called fads, right? Is because they have a clear start and they have a clear ending, and the fad that was last year is not even existing this year. And I think that's not it's not going to shape a great practice or a great longevity in a practice, is it? Because you know, short games end, and if you keep following fad after fad after fad, things will eventually end because they every short game does. So yeah, I think we're primed to do that, particularly if you haven't got a really clear vision of what your long game is, or you know, clear purpose. Your filter is very different because short games, in their essence, certain short games are very beneficial, right? Because they contribute to a long game. But short games by themselves can distract you from the long game. So I think if you're clear on what your long game is, you can, like, if I scroll through a social media thread, I'm not on it that often, but if I'm scrolling through, I'm looking for things that contribute to my long game. You know, conversations, you know, like the same as podcasts. You know, the reason that I've been listening to your podcast because communication is really important to me to be able to play the long game and help other people achieve their long game. So it was a no-brainer to, you know, subscribe to your podcast for that reason.
Well, thank
Whereas
you.
there'll be other things out there that may be exciting short games, but I wouldn't subscribe to them because they're not going to add to the long game. So does that make sense? So yeah, I think
Yeah,
there's a lot of
absolutely.
resources out there that you don't want to write off all short games.
No,
You
definitely.
want
It's a
to,
good point.
find the ones that contribute to our long game. And we've got multiple long games, right? But they all seem to follow the same thread if you tend to be value driven or purpose driven.
Absolutely. So if we look back to the beginning of your long game, it started off with reading in a triathlon magazine about chiropractic. I'm assuming there were some steps between that and you enrolling in a chiropractic college. So tell us what sort of influenced you in that slightly broader sense to become a chiropractor?
Yeah, it's an interesting journey because I so didn't know anything about chiropractic until I read that article, and I guess I applied that article to I was a runner at the time, so I looked up all the chiropractors in my neighbourhood. I grew up in sort of near Essendon in Melbourne, and there was sort of 20 within a bike riding distance because I was still not driving car at that stage, so I visited all 20 in the next probably 2 months. And I remember the first one I went to, that was a good education. It was Michael Portelli in Essendon.
Excellent. Yep.
Great first chiropractor to go visit. And then I sort of rode my BMX up there, and it was probably about a I know, half an hour. So I turned up a little bit sweaty in shorts and a t-shirt, and he sent me home again and said, go put trousers, shirt, tie back on, and then come back and play. And I was
Yeah.
like, that was a good lesson. I remember it vividly because I thought, okay, this is a profession that has standards.
Yeah, absolutely.
If someone just let me just rock up in shorts and t-shirt and I was sweating like a camel driver, then that's a different perspective of a profession, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, and I visited all 20 in the first couple of months, and I got a good range of what was possible in chiropractic. Like Michael's practice, just absolutely thriving. He was playing the long game, lots of families there, and that was congruent of what my perspective of chiropractic was.
Yeah.
And then I'd go to other practices, which will be the complete antithesis to that, and didn't have the same energy or vibe that I was chasing. And it didn't put me off. It just made me realize that in any profession like chiropractic, you can take your own journey.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
so then I was more narrowed down to which practices were aligned, and I'd go visit more and more of those practices. Within that year after that, I knew exactly what I was going to do, and I was going to become a chiropractor. I did apply straight out of sort of high school to RMIT and Macquarie and got rejected
Oh, wow.
from those. And I thought, okay, that's because I remember the interview, and I was madly passionate about that, but obviously maybe didn't have the grades or something. So then I went and did a different degree that was aligned with chiropractic. So I did both a Bachelor of Arts to learn more about people and a Bachelor of Applied Science to learn more about the nerve system,
Yep.
and combined them together, and then got as good a grade as I could because I knew that would get me back into chiropractic.
Yeah.
And then applied, got accepted by both Macquarie, RMIT, and New Zealand, because I'd heard about New Zealand. And I thought, great, I'm in. I'll go traveling for a year, because once I'm in, once I start, I'm kind of all in, right? So I
Yeah.
thought, okay, let me just go and grow as a human being a bit more and see the world. And then went to New Zealand. New Zealand was recommended to me by people at RMIT, actually.
Yeah, really well.
Yeah, the fact that I went to a party with Paul Bergamo.
Oh, yeah.
And he, I didn't know him at the time, but I sort of chatted about what I wanted to do, and he talked about RMIT and just sort of said, have you heard about this place called New Zealand? And I knew about New Zealand, but NZCC. And
It's
I had no idea about it, but I tracked it down just in case I couldn't get into the RMIT or the Macquarie. And that was, same thing, chiropractic reveals itself, right? So NZCC was just starting. It was 100% aligned with the type of chiropractic I was searching for. So made the journey across and got, yeah, it was good. It was about 12 Australians arrived the same time as me. So it was a good journey.
Wow.
It was
Yeah.
very exciting, complete naivety. It was a small group of us trained purely by chiropractors to become good chiropractors. And yeah, very exciting time to study chiropractic, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember those early NZCC years. It was a pretty exciting time looking at, having an institution that was so aligned with the vision that many of us had for chiropractic. So, yeah, great times. So, along that journey between then and now, who or what would you say have been your biggest chiropractic influences?
It's a good question because you have layers of influence, right? You have your idolizers, which was the big names like your Reggie and that sort of level, which you tried to find as many tapes as you possibly could because it was tapes back in the day, and you'd wear them out, and then and you in the off chance one of them will head down to the either Australia or New Zealand, so you'd immerse yourself in that level, and then you got your immediate contact. I mean, I was educated by Mark Possehl, Phil McMaster, Robin Kelly. There was the core group of people that were here in New Zealand. Mark Cross that became the people that framed chiropractic for us. And that's quite nice to be able to sort of see what's possible. And their education style was more probably what you do in practice. You have energy, enthusiasm, and certainty, and you layer that with some skill development, and you're going to become a good chiropractor.
Absolutely.
That's as simple as it was. That it wasn't clouded by material that you have to study to become board registered. So that was quite nice. So yeah, so there's multiple layers, and I think that continues, right? You come across and meet people. that are aligned, that push the boundaries, that educate you in a way that you know that allows you to grow, which is why you turn up to as many aligned seminars as you possibly can, to get that dipping and probably more so hang out with people like yourself that are doing the same thing, and keep educating yourself from that perspective. So it's an easy journey once you know where you're heading, because you either gravitate towards things that are aligned or you move away from things that aren't.
Awesome. And so outside of chiropractic, any other significant influences that you would say kind of have pushed you to see the world the way that you do or impacted you in those big ways?
Look, I think you go through phases, right? So, when you become like a chair of the board or so forth, you immediately gravitate towards, okay, who's aligned with the style of leadership that will take me in that direction, that's aligned values and principles and passions and purpose and so forth. So I spent a lot of time reading leadership. John Maxwell was probably one of my main drivers towards that. I thought that was he's so aligned with a big vision and a great service and servant orientated leadership. So he'd be probably one of the people that I still listen to now. I listen to his podcasts, and I just like dipping into whatever he says. The podcast that they do on Maxwell is you get maybe 5 minutes of John, and then you get some other people describing what he said. And I just like that 5 minutes of John, because you just need a little dip, and it lines and reminds you of the style of leadership that can help in a different sand pitch you're playing. But I've stepped a little bit out of leadership roles for a little while, so that still ticks over. And you look for other things, like it could be, it could be investments, it could be property, it could be you look for who's aligned with that, and you look for all the resources. So yeah, I think you just go through phases of what growth area you're working on at that moment, and use the same filters. And it's quite same thing. It's an easier decision when you've got your filters,
Yeah, absolutely.
work that through. So yeah. It makes for a nice easy journey, I think. And same as partners, same as everything, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
The same stuff.
Love it. I love it. So listen, mate, thank you so much for jumping on the call and sharing your wisdom and perspective. I think there's so much that you've achieved, and your style are very kind of thoughtful and purposeful. Achievement and leadership is something that our profession really needs, and I really value learning from you and you sharing with us today. So thanks, really appreciate it.
No, thank you too. And it's been a real pleasure to sit and have a chat with you as always. And I'll look forward to many more chats going forward, and either some of
Awesome.
the events or wherever we get to catch up. But thanks for everything you're doing, mate. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, mate. If you like today's episode, then you will love the Retention Recipe 2.0. It's an online workshop that is broken into 33 lessons and has over 7 hours of content, which will teach you to confidently communicate the value of proactive chiropractic in the first 12 visits. So if we want to have long-term retention, if we want people to stay with us for months, years, and reap the really amazing health benefits that happen with long-term chiropractic care, we need to set the foundation for that in the first 12 visits. So the approaches in the Retention Recipe 2.0 are based on state-of-the-art influence strategies that are effective, ethical, and they're enjoyable to use. They will help you to have more fun, less stress, and increase your retention, which means more practice growth and less always being on the hunt for new people. Check it out in the link in the show notes.